turn our attention to Yahweh's covenant and the conditions of his covenant, I would like to speak to the stupidity of the SRN news as it relates to GMO, genetically modified organisms. And, you know, Kirk, do you know how much food that you can consume? You go to a grocery store and you buy corn, you buy some lettuce, you buy some carrots, you buy food. You buy some meat, you buy a steak. Do you know how much of that food has not been genetically modified?
Well, there are degrees of everything, but of course everything has to be handled or done this too or that too, and you know. So
the answer is 100% of it. 100% of it. Yeah, in fact, if you like a corn tortilla, corn does not exist in the natural state anywhere in the world. It's a genetically modified plant. If we were not to have genetically modified, and we began to genetically modify foodstuffs back thousands of years ago, if farmers didn't pick seeds that were the least susceptible to blight, least susceptible to insects, least susceptible to disease, most productive, the whole planet would starve. And it is by genetically modifying that we are able to avoid the natural progression of things.
Mm-hmm. So, well,
everything is genetically modified. In fact, our children are genetically modified because we choose who we're going to partner with.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's my dog is sitting right here on my lap, the same thing. I
mean. Oh, absolutely. In fact, virtually all of the various breeds of dogs are genetically modified to create breeds that we like, that have behaviors that we like and appearances that we like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all. Cats are the same thing. It's all genetically modified. You know, this concern over GMOs is just ridiculous. But anyway, we have a lost society, and Yahweh has a plan. Let's return to his plan as to what he had to say. Let's catch up with where we were. He says, this one and only family-oriented covenant relationship of mine. Now, you'd think that would be enough to awaken, what do we think, about 2.5 billion Christians?
I gave up a long time ago.
How do you tout this book named after the Egyptian sun goddess Biblia? With its New Testament, based upon this notion of a new covenant, a different covenant, if God says, I only got one of them.
Hey, you got a problem.
I think you got a problem. Yeah. That's why I say it's impossible to be informed and rational and be a Christian. So we've just eliminated half the equation, if you're listening. This one and only, Zeth. Particular, singular, unique, and specific family-oriented covenant of mine. How in the world is it possible that the Torah is, as Paul writes, pornography, that it's mean-spirited, that it can't save, and that it enslaves, and the focal point of the Torah, the entire purpose of the Torah, mm-hmm. is to guide us to and enable our participation in the covenant?
Well, you just lie, and you keep repeating the lie, and then eventually everybody starts believing the lie, and you sell that program. And that's what somebody did eventually. I mean, Paul was not very good at it, to be honest with you, because everybody deserted him, but the people that followed him certainly did.
And how did Christianity manage to twist what Yah was offering? He's offering a relationship, and they twisted that to say that, you know, you want God to save you. God's offering a relationship. Salvation is a byproduct of that relationship. They just skipped over the relationship, and they focused on salvation. Because God's not saying that this one and only means the salvation of mine, is he?
No. No, that's a byproduct, but not certainly not the intent. The intent is family.
right.
in friendship. Yeah.
Can you, maybe you can enlighten me here, because I'm not smart enough to understand this. How is it possible that a sane God would want to save people who don't know him, who claim that his plan is mean and incompetent, and who their only desire is to be to have him save them? Why would God want to spend eternity with such individuals?
Well, I don't think he would. The way he's couched, though, in the argument for the Christian, as they talk, like, you know, he would have to be kind of mean not to save me, but they don't want
Why?
Things.
Why would he have to be mean to save you? What have you done to make yourself worthy of being saved in the sense of, I don't mean worthy in the sense of doing something that makes you the great evaluator of ancient Hebrew
Yeah.
alphabetic characters. I'm talking about, why would God have any interest in spending eternity with you?
Well, he wouldn't, but these people wouldn't have much interest in him either. They declare it, you know, quite readily.
I mean, you know, if I tell somebody there is no one named Jesus, and if you're focusing on the diminished manifestation, you're looking in the wrong direction anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And Christ most certainly isn't a last name, and it has absolutely nothing to do with Yahweh, and he doesn't have a church. And I can prove all of those things. Prove them absolutely, unequivocally, without any question. And let me just lay some of the foundation for Jesus is wrong, Christ is wrong, church is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you lay that, and they say, they don't care. So if you don't care what his name is, you don't care what he wants, you don't care what he's offering. In fact, you're not even willing to consider that he has a different name, a different purpose. He has a covenant, not a church. Why in the world would God want to save someone like that?
Well, let me go further. My experience has been even the ones who start to get it or start to look at it, when push comes to shove, they would rather stay with their family that's
Correct.
Involved in the church
Correct.
Than go to God's house.
Correct. I was up in a little Dutch community yesterday with my wife, and it was Sunday, of course. So the number of families that had their little girls dressed up in their little Sunday outfits that, you know, were parading down the streets as if they did something good for their family, it's just repulsive. God, it was horrible to see. Oh, and then all of the signs on the churches, you know, come see what Jesus Christ is doing with his church.
Mm-hmm.
No Jesus, there's no Christ, and there's no correlation, no involvement whatsoever, no link of any kind between God and the church.
And no instructions how to run one, which he would have done. If he wanted one, he would have told you how to run it.
God, and they'll say, well, my Bible says that he established his church. No. Yeah, your Bible might say that. But that's not what he said. He said that upon this sewer, this rock, I have built the family name Bana upon my mikra, my invitation to be called out
mm-hmm.
and to meet. And he affirmed that in the very first statement that he made in Bereshit in Genesis, where he talked about the sun and moon becoming visible as signs so that we would know the timing of the moed, which are these moed mikrae, the meetings with God. And yet, they will cling to the lie. Do you think that God wants to spend eternity? I mean, I don't, but do you think that God wants to spend with eternity with those that prefer the lie to the truth?
Well, he said he didn't, so, I mean, that's good enough. I mean, obviously he wouldn't.
If God established the terms and conditions of the covenant with Abraham and he delineated those terms and conditions to us, and he said, you know, this is your choice. If you want to be part of my family, these are the conditions to participate, and these are the benefits. Would he be trustworthy if he said, oh, well, you can ignore everything I said in the past? Doesn't apply?
No. At what point would you trust him?
You couldn't.
Trust him?
Yeah, you couldn't. So just the opening of the statement completely destroys the myth of Christianity. Of course, it destroys the myth of Islam, because Islam claims that it is, that it confirms the Torah. And yet, this is the antithesis of Islam. There is no covenant in Islam, much less a one and only. So this one and only family-oriented covenant of mine, which relationally and beneficially, now he didn't say which by mean-spirited, by wrath, by dominant lordship, by imposition, by rule and law.
No,
nor I'm sure if we were to read, however, the New Living Translation, they would say you should obey, because it's Shamar is there. But it says you should observe. Would you mind just sharing the letters of Shamar? There's only three of them. I mean, it shouldn't be hard for somebody to translate Shamar, since you know, observe and observation is not only a easy concept to define, but the whole concept of close examination and careful consideration, which is what Shamar means, is germane to the sciences. I mean, the foundation of the sciences is to Shamar, but also in the arts. Is there anything more important to being a good artist than closely examining, carefully considering that which you're going to render?
No, you have to observe it. You have to look at it, study it. It's a visual medium. What else could you do?
Exactly. In fact, if you were not observant, would it be possible to be an artist?
No, blind people can sculpt, but they can't paint. I mean, you can't draw and paint, so.
Right.
So.
And blind people can sculpt. They can only, what they're doing is they're observing with their hands. They're feeling a three-dimensional object, and they have this ability with their hands to translate that. But they're observing with their hands, just not with their eyes.
Right. That's what art teachers actually do, is train you to look. It's easy to train your hands to do it.
Right.
But you got to be able to see what you're, observe it carefully on what's going on.
There's a form of art that is that I enjoy. It's digital photography.
Mm-hmm.
And observation is the key.
Mm-hmm.
This one and only, singular and unique, specific, family-oriented, covenant relationship of mine, Berith, which relationally and beneficially, you should actually and continuously observe. Between me, for the purpose of coming to know and understand me, as a result of being perceptive, prudently considering the insights which are discernible regarding me, and that's from Bien, and between you, Wa Bien, to cause you to be aware and to understand, making connections, and between Wa Bien, for the purpose of coming to know and relating to your offspring, Zira, your seed, following you, for you to actually circumcise Mul accordingly to approach your every male, for them to remember Zakar. None of that sounds difficult to me, and it was written very precisely. I'm going to go out on a limb here, Kirk. The author of Life, the individual who came up with a three-dimensional alphabet and writing system to create the language of life, which is DNA, I highly suspect that this individual who used his words to create the universe, that he is capable of saying what he means to say, that language is not a mystery to him. I want to take a probability on that. What do you think, Kirk? Think he can communicate?
Can certainly communicate, and he does very well if you pay attention. So,
would we be wise, as religious publishers do, to help him some, to help him make his edict sound more religious by changing the words.
Well, it only
Go ahead.
No, I say it only proves that religious leaders or the translators are more interested in the money and the life here than going and being part of his family, because you cannot possibly want to change anything unless you either didn't believe it or you just don't want any part of it.
Like, for example, how would you deal with the fact that he says, this one and only covenant of mine? How would you make that then Jewish thing?
Yeah, well, you assume that's a Jewish deal. You don't want to be Jewish.
But... Yeah. And we don't want to actually explain that the word upon which Jew was corrupted is Ya'ud and Ya'udem, and that Ya'udem means those who are related to Yah and those who relate to Yah.
Mm-hmm.
If you're part of his covenant family, are you related to him?
Absolutely. You're adopted.
And if you listen to what he has to say, if you're observant, are you relating to him?
Absolutely. He said that's his most important criteria, as he wants to observe.
So isn't the name Ya'ud and Ya'udi and Ya'udim something that would, do you think you'd want to do?
It should be the name you'd want attached to your name.
Absolutely.
Plant your name.
Absolutely. You know, when we were doing the Friday program, and Larry pulled out the New Living Translation, which is the most popular translation among Christians today, and read it, they routinely changed shamar, which means to observe in the sense of closely examining, carefully considering, to obey.
Yeah.
Did you find anything even remotely akin to obey when you studied the meaning of that word?
No, there's nothing there.
In fact, is there a Hebrew word that even attempts to convey the concept of obedience?
No. Everything is volitional.
Yeah.
We're
in fact, doesn't Hebrew even have a moods? I mean, and don't all of the moods convey volition?
Mm-hmm.
When you obey someone, are you then in a command and control construct where it is command and obedience?
Yes.
Law and obedience to such laws?
No, you have no choice in a command thing. You obey. You do exactly what you're told.
Right. And yet, the moods in Hebrew, there is no mood in Hebrew that says obey, does there? It's all by choice.
No.
And so, why don't we look at these two words that we have so far?
Okay.
Be'eth.
Okay.
B, Y, and then the T-H. What do we have with B-F?
Well, the B, of course, is the...
We've got another 20 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, we've got the B, of course, is the family home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the center of everything. He wants you to be a part of the family home. Yes, and we have the Y, of course, is him reaching down. That symbolism is him reaching down, Yahweh reaching down to lift us up.
Yeah. And I misled you, and I apologize. There's also, a Rosh in the middle of it. Which
I'm sorry. Yes, again, right in front of my face.
We'll be back. So Yahweh is focusing on one thing, and that's his covenant. It's B-R-Y-T-H. Then the T-H sound. The first letter defines its purpose, doesn't it?
Uh-huh, that's the family home.
Right.
And that's what it's all about. That's what he's trying to do, is have a family
home. Oh, by the way, and he ends this with a Y, saying that it's my family home.
Yes.
So if you want to be part of Yahweh's family, he's telling you the way. If you want to enter Yahweh's home, he's telling you the way.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be, extrapolating here?
No, I don't think so.
So this is God's family.
Yes.
And God's home. Is God's home synonymous with heaven?
Yes.
So if you want to get into heaven, you're going to need to find the way into his home and to be part of his family. Could we make that connection by him saying that this covenant is his, this family and home is his?
Mm-hmm.
So is there any way, according to this, to be part of his family and get into his home without doing so through the covenant?
No.
Because how many homes does he says he have here?
He says he has one and one door.
Does he ever write homes and associate himself in the plural?
No.
Does he ever write families and associate himself in the plural?
No.
So he's saying here he only has one, and he never writes it in the plural, ever.
No, not as far as I know.
No, I've checked.
Y-M somewhere, and I don't see it.
No. Never plural. So God has one family and one home. His home is synonymous with heaven, and his family is synonymous with a close personal relationship. And so there's only one way to engage in a relationship with Yahweh. There's only one way to enter his home. There's only one way into heaven. And it's Yah only saves those he's related to, so there's only one means to salvation. It is through this very covenant. You'd think that people would want to know what they need to do to engage in this family and enter the home.
Well,
by the way, this home, when the letter Beth describes it, Kirk, which is it's a footprint, it's a blueprint of a home.
Mm-hmm.
How many doorways are there to that home?
Well, that's why I always say it's one doorway, because on this particular letter, there's only one doorway in. And it's,
yeah.
So that's pretty...
Does the doorway face left, right, down, or up as the letter is oriented?
It faces up.
Hmm.
Now, I wonder who's up.
There you
what's
go.
What's up, as they say.
Yeah, what's up, man? All right, so you got the first letter that defines the word, Beth. What is Beth? The letter itself is named, has a meaning in Hebrew. Do you know what Beth means in Hebrew?
It's home.
Yeah, home, family and home.
Family,
that's what Beth means. So this is Yahweh's family and home. That's the letter Beth. All right, then we have a Rosh.
We have a Rosh, which is a person who has, it's just the head, so everything is about the head of the person, which is where you think and where you see and where you hear your observation and where you would respond with your mouth as well.
Mm-hmm. So yes, the first thing you ought to do, too, it does mean first, doesn't it?
Yes, it is tops and first.
Yep. The first word in the Torah is Ba Reshith, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Ba means in, and then Reshith is beginning.
Uh-huh.
The word Reshith, isn't it based on Rosh?
It is.
Hmm. So I'm noticing a trend here. So this is at the very beginning to be part of his family. As the top priority, which is part of the meaning of Rosh.
Are these people?
Because the head is the top of the body. So at the very beginning, your top priority ought to be what Rosh demonstrates. It's a head with eyes, ears, and a brain.
And it also tells you it's his top priority as the person who considers and observes.
Oh, and the first family.
He should be quite comfortable.
Yeah.
It's a two-way street.
Yeah, absolutely. So here we've got the home and the family of Yahweh, and the people who get to enter it are observant. They're using their eyes to see. They're using their ears to listen to what Yahweh has to say. They're using their brains to process. And then after they understand, they know and understand, they're using their mouths to respond.
Right.
And that's that seems clear enough so far.
Oh, yeah.
All right, but it's going to get confusing. This next letter, I'm sure, is going to really throw us off. It's probably a fist, and it says, you know, I'm mean, and so I'm going to keep you away. I'm just dangling this thing out there, but it's impossible for you to enjoy this. I'm going to keep it from you. I'm a mean spirit and vengeful Lord, right? Well, that's what the next letter is going to say?
Well, unfortunately, you're going to find the arm reaching down with an open hand that doesn't have a stick in it, so you can't get there from where you're talking, but he has an open hand for greeting and lifting and grabbing and holding on to eventually.
So I can't be religious if I'm observant. If I look at the letters that comprise the word, I can't be religious, can I?
No, because you're not kneeling down.
No. So this is the hand, you know, the hand of a father to lift us up.
Yeah, if you're going to lift up, he can't be asking you to get down if he's going to lift you up.
Yeah, why would God want you to get down on your knees and worship him as a Lord if the first letter of his name and the middle letter of what he desires, which is his family, his covenant, is a arm reaching down and out with an open hand to lift us up?
It's The whole thing becomes absurd if you if you just know three or four
wouldn't
words.
That be counterproductive? If God is offering to lift you up, wouldn't it be counterproductive to get to your knees and fall down? Wouldn't it be defeating the whole purpose?
I don't know how you could. Well, there are three places come to mind immediately where he says, Abraham, walk with me, Adam and Joel, he walks with them, and Yahushua says, follow me.
Right.
And it's all engaged by walking and spending time together.
Yeah. Isn't the third condition of the covenant, walk to me and become perfect?
Absolutely.
Did it say, get down on your knees and beg me for me to perfect you?
I'm afraid you can't find that.
Is there a path that Yahweh provided that he actually demonstrated, the path that Abraham walked to Mount Moriah, which means to revere Yah, the path that the children of Israel were led on by Yahweh out of the crucible of religion and human oppression to the promised land? Is there a path that Yahweh depicts in the heart of his Torah, say in Kara, which is the middle book of the Torah? Is there a path there?
Yes.
Does the path begin with a gateway or a doorway?
Yes, with a doorway.
Does it end with a home?
It comes with a family home where we relax together forever.
Son of a gun. So you've got a path that he described to Abraham, that he demonstrated visually in history with the children of Israel during the Exodus, and it begins with a doorway and ends with, it concludes with a home?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I wonder if that home might just happen to be the covenant.
Yeah.
See, I wonder if the doorway is Passover, the doorway of the Exodus, the doorway to life.
Now, even though to some this may sound like we're being a little sarcastic and all, but it's,
we are
because it's so stupid.
It's so simple.
And because we didn't see it, and others fight it so hard. I mean, it's just this is absurd. He said exactly what he means. He means exactly what he says.
He's a very effective communicator.
Yeah.
And yes, we do have a snarky tone.
Yeah, and that's
because religion is snarky.
Yeah,
religion has this tone and is willing to disregard the obvious. When they're shown the truth, they will disregard it and cling to the lie.
And religion is a killer.
It's a killer.
It's an absolute killer.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, Yahweh does have a pathway to him. So you've got here these first three letters, the family home of God, the observant person who is looking at, who is listening to Yahweh's testimony, that is processing it and responding to him. Who then benefits from the hand, then arm and hand is reaching down and out to us with the open hand. There's one more letter.
Yeah, and this is, you'll find it written mostly with a tall. You could use a thet, though, for a TH sound. But either way, they're kind of interchangeable T's.
Yeah, and the letters are actually drawn very similarly, aren't they?
Mm-hmm, because they both have a cross beam, so
right.
So either way, you're in good company, and I'm kind of on the same page with you as I look at both of them together.
One of them conveys the upright pillar of the tabernacle and the lintel of the doorway, which establishes that portal or doorway to greater dimensions, if you will, and the doorway that you walk through to become part of Yahweh's family, and the upright one where he diminished himself to become the upright one so we can stand upright with him, the Edon that runs through the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And so one is the upright pillar with the beam above it that both provides the doorway and the security of the home. And the other is just rotated like an X.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you want to sign a document, they're going to say X marks the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Put your X right there. Put your mark there.
Right.
And it actually means mark or signature.
Right. And if you put the circle around it, it becomes an enclosure, which is a protective enclosure, which the family home would be as well.
Right.
So I'm
right.
To extrapolate all those things without being, and be quite confident that you're saying exactly right.
Correct.
Going exactly right.
So this is Yahweh's signature on the enclosure, so that those who bear Yahweh's name are going to be enclosed and protected by him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the family home, as a result of availing themselves of his open hand and outstretched arm. And they're going to do so by paying attention to, by observing the family home of God.
Yeah, think of the Ark of the Covenant. Think of the Ark that Noah was on. Think of the Garden of Eden, an enclosure,
right.
A wonderful enclosure where everything is wonderful and perfect.
It's protected, right.
Protected.
Yeah, Garden of Eden was a enclosed and protected garden, right?
Yeah.
Now, the ark was was protection and enclosure in the midst of the stormy seas.
Mm-hmm. Now, I probably did this once before, at least on one program or another.
Okay.
But the two old meanings of this are quite fascinating to me. The first meaning is given is the sacrifice, which is to slay an animal which is cut in two,
mm-hmm.
and the parties of the covenant pass through the pieces.
Right.
Now, that conjures up the doorway, the Passover door, where someone was cut. You know, and it wasn't the sacrificial lamb, which was Yahusha. And
right.
so that's totally in keeping. They had that right from long ago. And if one, and also the second part of meaning that is given is if one party fails to meet the agreements of the covenant, then the other may do the same to them. So that's showing that it's obviously a two-sided street. It's not...
Correct.
Not equivalent parts, but certainly participatory on both parties.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Yahweh demonstrated when he established the covenant with Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole story deliberately about cutting and being between the the Passover animals. First, before we can even get to Shamar, there's a word between Shamar and Bereth. It's, you know, this reads Zeph. This particular, singular, unique, and specific covenant, family, or any covenant relationship of mine. In fact, wait, let's backtrack before we get to Asher. And Z-T-H, in fact, I think it's, I don't know if it's Z-Ain, or if you happen to have the passage in front of you, it's Z-Alf or Z-Ain, T-H, on this one and only. Particular, unique, and specific.
I just got the Asher and then
what is the Z? How is it described?
It looks like a plow. Obviously, and it's to
draw a line in the sand to separate, right?
Right.
And it's also to make the soil receptive.
Receptive to the seed. Right.
Right. Yeah. When you put a plow in the ground, you're turning over the soil on the weeds, which keeps the weeds from competing with the good crop.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also cutting a line, so this is the division line, and you're making the soil more receptive to what you want to plant.
Right.
And then it's, I think it's the Ain, which is to provide perspective. Right, perspective and understanding, and the TH is on that which Yahweh has signed. That's his signature.
Signature, right? So.
Okay, so this one and only would be: I'm drawing a line in the sand.
Right.
I'm trying to uproot and eliminate the weeds, and I'm trying to make the good seed more receptive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for those who are perceptive, for those who use their eyes to understand, and you have my signature on this.
Right.
That's what one and only is, and we've just gone over that. Bayeth is the family home of Yahweh for those who are observant, using their eyes and ears to listen and their brains to process the information that Yahweh has provided regarding his outstretched and open hand designed to lift us up to the place that he has signed as belonging to him, to his name, his mark.
You could almost get the feeling that Yahweh is using a lot of overkill, so we must think we're awfully dumb.
Oh, no, I don't think it's... I think it's just the opposite. I think he's...
I'm being a little funny there, but...
I think he's using overkill because he wants to reinforce what he's communicating.
He wants you not to miss it.
Right.
So obviously,
how many times do you teach, when you're teaching art, and you're talking about, for example, sources of light, how many times will you talk about light sources to create dimension in your art?
Constantly.
In realism?
Over and over and over and over again.
Right.
You have to, when teaching us,
repetition is the
repetition,
essence, right?
repetition. But the point being, you cannot miss it if you're looking for it.
Correct. Yeah. In this particular case, Yahweh has left us without excuse.
Yeah.
He has reinforced his message in every possible way, right down to the jots and tittles. Do you think it was that Yahusha was being pedantic, emphasizing the scholastic for just to impress his audience as to how much smarter he was than they were, when he said that not a single yod or tittle, the yod is the smallest letter, that's the outstretched hand of Yahweh, and the tittles are the strokes that comprise the rest of these pictographic letters. Do you think that when he turned to that detail and said not a single stroke of a single letter, including and especially the yod, the one letter he called out by name, is going to be annulled or done away with or disregarded so long as the heavens of the Torah, so long as the heavens and earth exist? Do you think there might have been a reason that he directed our attention to them and said that these are valid for as long as the heavens and earth exist?
No, it was both acknowledgement of that's where you find it, as well as kind of almost a veiled thread. You people keep changing it, you know.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a combination of the two. For those who are open to him, mm-hmm. it was a here is some guidance. If you want to find the truth, go and look at these letters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go and look at the shapes of these letters, because they define the words that I use to introduce you to and guide you to the Torah. And for those who would be like Paul and Christians and would change what he has to say, it's a warning.
Yeah.
Don't do that. I'm not changing even the smallest building blocks of the letters that I use to convey the words of the Torah.
This should be so comforting to you to know that it's this way.
Well, that's what I agree. I think the religious God and the religious approach is so discomforting. And Yahweh and his approach are so comforting.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you get it, when you understand, that's exactly...
When you get it, you really get it.
Exactly. And it's wonderful.